meeting that we have on the international basis, together, working to degrade and ultimately to defeat ISIL, wherever it exists.
Kerry says as many as 40 nations have offered various levels of support. A memorial service yesterday in Mississippi for the five children who were allegedly killed by their father. Pastor Derek Marento says relatives are helping each other.
Some are, have been the backbone in supporting each other. Many have wept. Many, of course, are still just still shocked. But they're holding up very well.
Timothy Ray Jones is accused of killing the children and then dumping their bodies on a rural hilltop in Alabama. His lawyer says his client waived his preliminary hearing in South Carolina and has asked for a psychiatric evaluation. This is AP Radio News.
The stations of Radio Vermont presents the Vermont gubernatorial debate, brought to you this morning by Guy's Farm and Yard, your neighborhood community feed, grain, animal, and yard store, Barry Street, Montpelier, Portland Street, Morrisville, Taft's Corner in Williston, and online at guysfarmandyard.com. Live from the Northfield Savings Bank broadcast gazebo in Tunbridge, here is Mark Johnson.
Thank you very much, Jack Donovan, and welcome everybody here to the gazebo here at the fabulous Tunbridge World's Fair. We have a really great crowd here, and so far the weather seems to be holding. We're not going to get any rain until at least 12 noon. That is a guarantee. Thank you for joining us this morning, and I want to thank our candidates ahead of time for joining us. Let me just give you a little sense here of what we're going to do here for some ground rules. Most of the questions are going to be coming from me this morning, but we are attempting to get questions from you folks as well. We've already gotten a few. Jasper Goodman is here. He has some paper and pens. So he's going to be wandering through the crowd here. Please flag him down if you have a question. The briefer you can make it for me, the better. And so with that, we're going to get right down to business here this morning. And we do want to thank our friends at Guy's Farm and Yard for being our exclusive sponsor this hour. And thank you very much for that. And we are broadcasting not only on WDEV, AM and FM, but also on our sister station, Country WLVB in Morrisville. I'm going to begin this morning. I'm going to ask each of the candidate a question that is specific to them. And then most of the other questions are really going to involve all four candidates here. But let me first introduce our candidates here. Dan Feliciano on your far left here is a management consultant. He is running under the Libertarian Party banner. Emily Payton is an independent. And she is an activist. Governor Peter Shumlin is running as a Democrat. And Scott Milne, who is a business owner of Milne Travel, is running as a Republican. Governor Shumlin, let me start with you. 4 years ago, we sat here in this same gazebo, and you made a number of promises to Vermonters. I know you've been touting a lot of what you see as the economic progress that's happened here in Vermont. But in truth, I would argue that many people, compared to 4 years ago, are really either treading water or even behind when it comes to issues that you promised 2 years ago about controlling property taxes and health care costs. Can you really say today that a majority of Vermonters are better off today than they were 4 years ago when you stood here? And you have 2 minutes.
I'm proud of the progress that we've made in Vermont on the jobs. Sorry. Thank you, Eric. I'm proud of some of the progress that we've made on jobs and the economy, and you can't argue with the facts. The facts are that Vermont enjoys one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country. We know that we've created 9,200 new jobs since I've been governor, and we actually had the fastest growth rate in Vermont in the second quarter of 2014, income growth. We were second highest in the country. So we've made some real progress. None of that matters, as Mark points out, if you are a middle-class Vermonter who's working one or two jobs and still not seeing your income change, if you're a low-income Vermonter who's actually lost ground since the bottom of the Great Recession. So we are making the investments and the choices that we need to make to move our economy out of the toughest recession in American history. We're coming back. But like the rest of the country, this recovery is helping out the top 1% the most. The middle class continues to struggle, and low-income Vermonters continue to see losses, not gains.
So that's why I feel it's so critical that we continue to invest in early child education, higher education, workforce retraining. We've got Vermont employers out there who have jobs. The challenge we have now that's changed since when I was elected governor is that they can't find enough trained workers to do the jobs that they have. So we've got to match our skills, our education system, with the jobs that are out there that our employers currently are begging to fill. So we've made real progress. We're on the right track. But we've got a lot more work to do, and that's why I'm hoping that you'll give me the opportunity two more years to continue the work that you're doing.
Dan Feliciano, let me have you come up here. You've described state government as being disorganized and dysfunctional. I'd like you to talk about that a little bit, but also please explain to people here who I would say an awful lot of people here don't know you, why would they elect somebody who's a virtual unknown?
So I've spent many years as a consultant helping organizations such as the federal government, different states, and large cities with budgets much larger than the state of Vermont improve their efficiencies and their effectiveness. We've actually reduced costs and actually have improved the outcomes and services. So I'm running on a platform that I want to stop the single-payer healthcare system because I know there's alternative solutions that we can implement immediately rather than wait another 2 or 3 years and a finance plan to come forward with. And I want to cut spending. We can cut spending in a responsible and an efficient way so as not to harm Vermonters, but in a sense and in a way that we can create jobs by cutting the spending, cutting property taxes, and allowing school choice. So that's the platform that I'm running on, and I think when you look at my platform and you hear what I'm talking about and understand more closely what I'm talking about, looking at the numbers, improving our efficiencies, cutting spending, cutting property taxes will increase our job growth. We've been waiting for the jobs to come, and they haven't. We've been promised health care, and we haven't gotten it. We haven't gotten a finance plan yet. All these things we can move quicker on and do a much better job. And I have a deep background in healthcare and healthcare costs. So I know from the provider side how they operate. I know from an insurer side how they operate. And I also know what it's like to be a high utilizer of healthcare. So those are the things that I think I'm running on that'll resonate well with people.
Just briefly, this question of being an unknown, how are you going to deal with that?
Yep, I think we're doing a great job getting our message out. The media has been very, very charitable to us. So we're hitting every media outlet. We're doing as many press releases as we can, and we've been very active in social media as well.
Okay,
so,
thank you. Emily Payton, if you come up, that'd be great. You say on your webpage here. Okay. All right, we'll do what
better?
We can here. Let us know how we're doing. I appreciate that. All right. Emily, on your webpage, you described that one of your goals is to improve the political paradigm and the elimination of the ruling class. What do you mean by that?
Well, our biggest problem today, it isn't health care or it isn't education. It's the 1% taking the wealth of the working class and taking it out of the state. So what we need to do is we need to create economic conditions that lateralize our economic growth. In other words, we need economic growth to spurt up from the working people and to stay circulating around the working people. Right now, we currently have too much money as power for political political purposes, and as you know, we have a constitutional amendment that's waiting to happen around getting money out of politics. We have the 1% that's dominating with its focus on fossil fuels, and we also have its domination of the U.S. currency, U.S. dollar, where we could and should have a variety of means of exchanges in order to diversify in the same way we do with other things. It's good to have a diversified portfolio. It ought to be good to have diversified currencies so people can engage in the economy with dignity.
Thank you very much, Scott. Come up here, please. Scott, there have been a number of times in this campaign where you've told voters to stay tuned for specifics later on. Are you going to be prepared today to tell us some of your ideas when it comes to controlling property taxes and whether or not you have a better idea when it comes to health care reform?
Thanks, Mark. And I want to first say hello to Tunbridge. I've grown up in Orange County, been coming to this fair since the 60s. I know a few people are spreading rumors around about me and Fred Tuttle hanging out here doing bad things, but I was way too young back then, and it's great to be here. It's a fun part of this gubernatorial campaign to have the first debate after the primary here in Tunbridge. Looking forward to hanging out at the fair later on and talking to anybody they want, anybody that would like to hear more about issues. To answer your specific question, Mark, about property taxes, I think the number one issue in this campaign is the out-of-control rise of property taxes. It's the number one thing I've been hearing from people over the last 2 months. There's some very interesting ideas being floated around. There was a meeting in South Burlington a couple of weeks ago with a whole bunch of municipal officials. As folks that have been paying attention to my campaign may know, one of my primary planks is that we need to be making decisions at a local level as much as possible. I think Vermonters are sick and tired of having a state government and a governor that flies around the country, comes up with a new idea, and talks the legislature into forcing it upon us. Those days are over. One of the ideas that came out of the meeting with local officials in South Burlington a couple of weeks ago is to put a two-year cap on property taxes while we figure out how to properly fund education. I'm an advocate for putting a two-year cap on property taxes while we figure out how to properly fund education. These days of double-digit property increases while local officials are holding their school budgets in tow and having a governor tell school boards that it's their fault that property taxes are going up when we've got a complicated system. Excuse me, that only two people in the state probably actually understand how it works is not going to be part of a Scott Milne administration. So I'm very much looking forward to talking more to the press and the people of Vermont about the cap on property taxes proposal, which we'll be putting forward over the next 2 weeks.
And health care reform?
Health care reform is a complicated issue. I was happy to finally see Governor Shumlin, although he apparently doubled down on he's going to be the most progressive radical governor in the country and push forward with his health care proposal and some of the other things he's been doing. That was on Tuesday when he was talking to his Democratic friends at his campaign launch. Yesterday on public radio, he seemed to change his mind and say, well, if this health care thing isn't going to be good for jobs, I'm not going forward with it. Well, I thought the program 4 years ago, when we got into this health care thing, was that it was the fundamental way we were going to fix our economy. If we spent 4 years trying to do this, and it's fundamentally ruining our economy. It seems like it's 4 years that have gone by. I think it's time for a new governor.
All right, thank you very much. Let's continue our discussion here about health care reform. Dan, if you could come up here next, I'd like to get some of your thoughts. Do you support or oppose the effort on the part of the current administration to move towards this universal system?
Oh, I'm not
90 seconds.
Yeah, I've come out against the single payer healthcare system from the get-go. I think there's free market solutions, free market alternatives that can actually drive down the cost of healthcare and provide Vermonters with the choice. I don't think there's a single plan that's going to be perfect for everyone, and I don't know why we would be forced into a single plan. So I think we focus in on opening up the marketplace to more insurers by reducing a lot of the regulations that are in place that are constraining the single payer health system. And we also need to understand that 75% of the healthcare costs are actually from chronic illness and diseases. And we need to work better with the Vermonters and ourselves on how to control those costs. The way the single payer system is being rolled out right now, it does nothing to affect that 75% cost of the chronic illness and disease, which is that's where the big money is if we're going to save money. It's not by going to a brand new infrastructure that's redundant. There's already insurance companies that have those systems in place. There's no need for us to waste federal tax dollar monies to do so. And the Vermont Health Connect has been a total disaster. I think we can move everyone over to the federal health exchange. I understand there's a lot of subsidies and handouts associated with it, but I think the monies that we save will more than offset any of those costs that we have right now.
The regulations you're talking about, would you get rid of community rating?
I think we can go to a modified community rating system that doesn't alienate anyone. I think just like we have, everyone has car insurance here. When you have car insurance, the good drivers are rewarded with lower premiums. And I think we can do the same.
All right, Governor Shumlin, can you address the same question that I asked, please?
One thing that's clear, in this election, there's a choice. And there's probably never been such a clear choice. On the one hand, we have Scott Milne, who refuses to tell you to have a plan or to tell you what that plan might be. Then you have Mr. Felisano, who has a plan, and it would take us back to the days when insurance companies could say to the old, to the sick, and to those who are disabled, we're going to charge you a higher rate, and the young and the healthy will charge you a lower rate. If you're really sick, you can't afford insurance. Governor Dick Snelling, the Republican governor, passed community rating to ensure that that kind of injustice wouldn't happen in Vermont. Here's the point. Going back to Mark's original question, what I focus on as governor every day is not only the daily things that I have to manage as governor, but I ask the question, when I'm all done, what have I done to really raise prosperity for the middle class who's struggling across America and in Vermont? And in my view, the biggest obstacle to job growth and to income growth is the rising cost of health care that rises faster than our incomes. So I have a good plan that will allow us to have universal access, health care because you're a Vermonter, not because of where you work or how wealthy you might be, and moving from a quantity-based reimbursement system to one that's based on outcomes, which we're currently, with the help of the Green Mountain Board, Healthcare Board, making happen. So here's my point. Right now in Vermont, we pay 20 cents of every dollar we make on healthcare. Those are the facts. If you make a buck in Vermont, on average, 20 cents goes to healthcare. It will be 40 cents if healthcare costs grow for the next 10 years at the same rate they did for the past 10.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you there. Thank you very
We've
much.
We've got to fix that.
Emily Payton, your support or opposition to the administration's healthcare reform efforts?
Well, I do believe that a society needs to take care of its health. It's healthy and needs to take care of its sick. And I don't think that we should skimp on that. But within this question of health care, we need to look very carefully at what we're paying for. If we're paying for $1,000 for four simple x-rays for a knee, then we're paying too much. We haven't been competitive. There are experts within the field that will tell you that death by medicine is the leading cause of death in this country. So what are we paying for? We need to begin to reduce our prescription practices seriously. Our opiate prescription practices should have a goal of reducing that by 70%. We should also reduce our psychiatric medication practices, especially of children. We should be rewarding those who are doing best practices with healthcare and disincentivizing bad healthcare. So, in other words, I am for everybody having health care, but within that, we need to take the medical business to task where they are soaking the people.
Scott, please come up. If you're elected governor, are you going to stop the administration's efforts here on health care reform?
Thank you, Mark. And I guess just for folks that are here, I know a lot of people weren't paying attention to elections over the summer. Two of the people behind me have been defeated by me in a Republican primary already. Looking forward to a robust discussion with Governor Shumlin about the issues that I think really divide Vermonters. I do want to say, though, that I agree with Governor Shumlin that a community rating is essential. One of the two people that lost to me in the primaries changed their tune about community rating over the last couple of weeks somewhat. I'm happy to see that. What I think about healthcare going forward is that this radical progressive rush to let's be first to do the most radical thing we can do was ill-conceived. We've been waiting for 4 years almost now to hear this plan that's going to be the kumbaya moment where everybody's going to have access, everything's going to be affordable, all the great doctors and nurses are going to stay here. We've been waiting for 4 years to hear how much it's going to cost, how it's going to work, or who's going to pay for it. We haven't seen that. I am very skeptical that it's going to work. And I'll be working very hard with people to get something figured out, but it seems quite clear even Governor Shumlin yesterday backtracked on his support for it. So I'm looking forward to folks that believe single payer might work being part of my campaign. I'm looking forward to moderates being part of my campaign. And very clearly, I'm looking forward to conservative support over the next 54 days.
We're going to get to some of your questions that you've given us, and I appreciate that. Jasper Goodman is here. He'll be wandering through the crowd. If you have a question for our four candidates, that would be great. If you're just tuning in, we're broadcasting live this morning from the Northfield Savings Bank gazebo here at the Tunbridge World's Fair. We've been talking with gubernatorial candidates Dan Feliciano, Emily Payton, Peter Shumlin, and Scott Milne. We'll take a short commercial break. We'll be back right after these important announcements.
A lot of people aren't really secure where their food comes from, not knowing if it's contaminated, not knowing how it's grown.
If you just want to do a few chickens, a few pigs, a beef cow, sky's the limit, or you can make it as small as you want.
Whatever we give to them, we feel like we get back tenfold. I love coming out here in the morning with a cup of coffee and saying hi to the cows and the pigs and the chickens. We're grateful to them, and we feel that we owe them the best life that we can give them.
Backyard farms are good for your family, belly, and soul. See the new film at guysfarmandyard.com.
We have about 10 ducks, 2 horses, and probably around 15 chickens. Me and my sister take care of all the animals.
Other than, you know, maybe playing a video game or watching TV, getting some fresh air, getting some exercise.
I think that it's definitely a great way to teach your kids something that's really useful for the rest of their lives.
Well, I want to have a farm when I grow up. I mean, definitely continue having animals.
Backyard farms are good for your family, belly, and soul. See the new film at guysfarmandyard.com.
Back here at the Northfield Savings Bank gazebo here at the Tunbridge World's Fair. We've been talking with the candidates for governor. We have a question here from our audience here. And Emily, let me start with you. What will each candidate do to stem the outflow of young from Vermont? And again, 90 seconds, please.
Oh, that's a wonderful question. That's one of our biggest problems. We need to offer debt-free education. We can do this with an online model. We can also do it with tuition exchanges. That is also why I am proposing that we rebuild our agricultural hemp manufacturing base, as well as grant and fund small worker-owned cooperatives. So we need to be funding a kitchen, one of those industrial kitchen incubators. We need to have one in every single county, so that our young people who are taking care of growing food can move forward with niche markets, which is an expanding sort of business in Vermont. Let's see, do I have more time?
Mm-hmm.
So let me describe how we can do a tuition service exchange. We need to have salaried doctors and nurses, because salaried doctors and nurses are less likely to do fee-for-service. In other words, they're less likely to do things on a profit base. So if we are to educate our doctors and nurses for our clinics at our schools and offer them an exchange for their tuition, we will be serving the future of Vermont and our youth.
Let's go to Scott Mullen on that same question. Stemming the outflow of youth from Vermont.
I bet my son Keith here, who talked his company into New York, into letting him work remotely for 2 months to help me out on my campaign. My daughter Elise, who transferred from law school in California to Vermont Law School to be part of this. Fortunately, if everybody could run for governor, it would solve the problem, but I don't think that's a very good solution. It's a huge problem, Mark. I think we've been blessed in Vermont over the last 52 years. I think there's a rich array of diverse governors that have done a good job. As people may know, it's been 52 years since an incumbent governor has lost an election campaign while in office. I'm hoping to be the person that's going to do what Phil Hoff did in 1962. Unfortunately, my friend Peter Shumlin, if I'm successful, will be the Ray Kieser of 1962 and 2014. I believe that the tone from the top of the governor's office throughout Peter Shumlin's political career has not been business friendly. I think there's a lot of arguments about whether or not Vermont's a business friendly state. But I don't think there's not a perception that we're not a business-friendly state. I think more balance in Montpelier, the election of a Republican governor, and the word around the nation that a small business person was able to unseat the powerful chairman of the Democratic Governors Association will bring a good tone from the top and help bring young people back to Vermont. It's going to take an awful lot of work after that.
Peter Shumlin, you're next.
You know, being governor means making decisions, having a plan, and executing them. Scott Milne, as you've just heard, has absolutely no plan. He just outlined no plan to ensure that Vermonters, young Vermonters, can stay here and work here. He has no plan on health care. He's only willing to criticize
the hard work that we've been doing. Being governor is about leadership. The way we will keep young people in Vermont and have more come back in the future is by doing the things that ensure that we continue to have a growing economy. What are they? A governor who balances budgets without raising income taxes, sales taxes, rooms and meals taxes on hardworking Vermonters, which I've done now four consecutive times. Making sure that we have universal pre-K so that every kid gets a strong start. That we have workforce retraining so that our older workers that want to continue working as jobs are changing are retrained for those jobs. Making sure that we're fiscally responsible and that we take on the real challenges that we're facing, like the rising cost of health care, which, if left alone, will gobble up any ability for middle class raises and for prosperity for Vermonters. And finally, doing what we're doing. You know, Scott mentioned his kids are back, they can work remotely. That's because we're delivering our promise of universal broadband to every last mile of Vermont. His kids could not be working remotely if it were not for the work that we've been doing. So let's keep on the track that we're on. Common sense, fiscal responsibility, marked and matched with courage.
Dan Feliciano, keeping the youth from leaving Vermont.
How do we keep the kids here? But first, let's clarify some health care issues, right? I'm for the community-based rating system. When Dick Snelling passed the community-based rating system, that was for group insurance plans only, okay? So I just want to make sure we're... I just want to make sure we're clear about that, and that healthcare costs aren't raising going up 9%, 9% or whatever you're saying, Pete. As you know, Obama just came out and said the healthcare rates are increasing about 2% per year, so we don't have to worry about that double-digit growth that you're talking about. How do we keep our kids in Vermont? We need to cut spending so it's affordable to young kids who are coming out of college and looking to work in Vermont. We need to cut our spending so that these kids that are coming out and earning decent wages can continue to prosper and grow. We need to cut our property taxes so that when these young kids get married and have kids, they can afford to buy a house and to raise their families and to send their kids to college. So we need to cut spending. We need to cut property taxes, and we need to provide school choice so that these young families have a choice of where their families can do and go. It's about you. You know what's best for you, not I, and I want to give you that choice and option.
I want to talk next about protecting children. Scott, let me have you come up here, and you'll start us off on this round. What more does state government need to do, including hiring more social workers, so that we can protect more children?
One of the things that I think is a powerful insight into the effective management and operation of state government is seeing the tens and approaching $100 million we've essentially flushed down the toilet on this single-payer healthcare experiment with no tangible benefit yet to Vermonters. I think if we look at the way human services, Agency of Commerce, other agencies of state government are using the people's money, seeing how the Health Connect project has very obviously wasted money is a good insight into perhaps there's better ways to run things there. I think the Agency of Human Services is the biggest part of the state budget. I think that under Governor Shumlin's leadership, we took a lot of stimulus money, did some patches and things that probably weren't smart, at least in hindsight. We could have got a new computer system set up at the Agency of Human Services 4 years ago, used some stimulus money to do that. I think essentially what we need to have is an Agency of Human Services that's putting the family first. I'm not an expert on this. We need to have a information system in the Agency of Human Services so that social workers can see all these different stovepipes of food stamps, other programs that are affecting the family, and be able to look at it on one screen, understand what's going on with the family, and be empowered to do the job for people. Everything we've seen about how much money we spend on kids per school, all this other thing, everything boils back to what's going on in the family, and I believe that the Agency of Human Services has not had the right tools or the right empowerment, the right resources to send towards it from the governor's office.
Thank you. Emily Payton, you're next on this question. Protecting children in Vermont. We've had 18,000 complaints registered about child abuse. Now, some of those are more one complaint about the same child, but still a number that's way too high.
Let's start with understanding that families isolated in their homes with crushing poverty is where this this sort of ignition of abuse happens. So where we can invite these families who are in this very, very low income bracket, who have to turn to things like selling drugs and then turn to things like violent encounters with people who are on crack cocaine and so forth, who are in danger of being kicked out of their home, all these stressors. If we can include them in the community more, can we give a family who is thus situated an opportunity to have their children come to art classes? I'm adding new ideas here. Have their children come to soccer practice. We need to get these families who are so isolated more engaged with the community, so the community can help monitor what's going on and can help absorb those stressors. Right now, when you're that poor, you stay isolated at home, and more of those social workers isn't really going to make all that much difference as long as they're isolated day after day at home with increasing tension.
Dan Feliciano, can you address that question, please?
So I'm not sure about the other candidates, but I do have a special needs child, and this is a topic very close and dear to my heart. So one of the things that I believe we can do is education. We have plenty of money in the Department of Agency and Health Services. It's been going up at 5.6% a year. How many of you got a pay raise of 5.6 last year? No one's raising their hand. It went up 7.6 last year. That's been the annual growth rate has been 5.6. What we need to do is we need to educate the families and make sure the kids are getting the right services at the right setting at the right time, just like you would do with medical services. But it starts with a holistic approach with families, including the parents, as well as the children themselves. We have plenty of money in that budget to provide these services. We can rebalance the prisoners, the amount of money we're spending on correctional facilities. That was one of the great ideas from Challenges for Change. Rebalance that budget. We can save 7.6% and move that over to make sure those kids are getting the services they want. We can reduce the cost of delivering health care services to our prisoners. We have one of the highest rates of prisoner costs, health care costs in the country, yet this is the governor that says he's going to reduce health care costs. So we can make sure that this agency has the right money, because there's money there, and we can divert it to educate the families and not only the immediate families, but the extended family members, to make sure that the children that are potentially at high risk for being abused or something like that are identified and cared for. There's a lot of Vermonters here that would love nothing more than help those children. When I see someone and I hear these horror stories about what's taking place, I want to take all those kids into those homes myself.
There is nothing that moves me more as governor than when we fail to protect our most vulnerable kids. And, you know, as governor, this isn't just an academic question for me. I stand at the vigil for Desiree, hugging her mom and her relatives, and when you're there sharing their grief, you understand the extraordinary responsibility we have to protect our children. When we fail and a child dies, we all fail. So I take this extremely seriously. What have we done? I've asked my department to do the following things. First, immediately ensure that whenever a child is returned to the custody of its parents after they've been separated, that we have a supervisor sign off on that reunification, and that we then have a social worker going into the home after the reunification to make certain that we have a higher success of that reunification being successful. Second, unlike what Dan just said about the budgets, I've increased the number of social workers by 18 so that we have more people out there serving these families that desperately need us. And finally, on October 1st, my secretary and my commissioner will give us a report on structural changes that we can make to be more successful. Here's the closer. As long as we have opiate addiction, OxyContin, heroin, and the other terrible things that are ravaging our state, we will continue to have parents do awful things to their kids. We have a responsibility to tackle that, and that's why Vermont is leading on a better way to deal with heroin and OxyContin addiction.
We're broadcasting live this morning from the Northfield Savings Bank gazebo here at the Tunbridge World's Fair. We're going to take a short commercial break. I want to thank our friends at Guy's Farm and Yard for sponsoring our broadcast. We'll be back right after this.
A lot of people aren't really secure where their food comes from, not knowing if it's contaminated, not knowing how it's grown.
If you just want to do a few chickens, a few pigs, a beef cow, sky's the limit, or you can make it as small as you want.
Whatever we give to them, we feel like we get back tenfold. I love coming out here in the morning with a cup of coffee and saying hi to the cows, the pigs, and the chickens. We're grateful to them, and we feel that we owe them the best life that we can give them.
Backyard farms are good for your family, belly, and soul. See the new film at guysfarmandyard.com.
We have about 10 ducks, 2 horses, and probably around 15 chickens. Me and my sister take care of all the animals.
Other than, you know, maybe playing a video game or watching TV, getting some fresh air, getting some exercise.
I think that it's definitely a great way to teach your kids something that's really useful for the rest of their lives.
Well, I want to have a farm when I'm older. I mean, definitely continue having animals.
Backyard farms are good for your family, belly, and soul. See the new film at guysfarmandyard.com.
We are back. We're broadcasting live this morning from the Tunbridge World's Fair. We are featuring a discussion between the candidates for governor. Governor, why don't you just stay right there at the mic? I want to start my next round here with you. Former Governor Jim Douglas has just written an autobiography, and in this, he claims that the following. Let me read this paragraph for you. The Senate leader, referring to you, who succeeded me in the governorship, was a strong proponent of gay marriage. Since he was nominated by a scant 200 votes in the Democratic primary, their support may well have provided the margin of victory. He later reciprocated by appointing one of the leading lobbyists of the movement to the Vermont Supreme Court. And of course, he's talking about Beth Robinson. Can you respond to that, please?
Well, sure. I wish Governor Douglas good luck with his book. I promise that whenever Vermonters are done with me, I won't write one. And what I can simply say is this. One of the things that I'm proud of is that Vermont had the courage to be the first state in the country that said, we're going to ensure that you can marry the person that you love, regardless of all of the prejudices that have swept across this country in the past. Now, if anyone doesn't think that my picks for the court have been good, I would love to hear from you. But I believe that Beth Robinson is one of the greatest justices ever appointed to the Supreme Court, and I'm grateful that she's doing her job as well as she is. Having said that, I want to go back to what really matters. Scott Milne has not given us one single plan in this debate about what he's going to do about the challenges at DCF, about property taxes, about health care. He did just give us a smidgen on property taxes, the first suggestion ever. I heard him say, I'm going to protect local control, but I'm going to cap property taxes and tell local communities how much they can spend. You can't have it both ways. One of the worst ideas that we could endeavor is telling local communities that we're going to take away their power to choose what they're going to spend on education on town meeting day. That's a basic right of Vermonters. If you cap it, you say to them, you're on your own.
Okay, thank you. Scott Milne, let's go to you next, and I'd like to have you address this question about Beth Robinson. Do you agree with Jim Douglas's analysis?
I think Vermonters elect governors to make appointments, and I like a process where the legislature gives deferences to the governor's choices. I don't know Beth Robinson personally, but I have a lot of respect for her.
If you'd like to take the rest of the time to address some of the other things Mr. Shumlin just raised, you may.
Sure. Again, it's hard in this where there's a very serious opportunity for Vermont to head in a different direction by choosing a new governor. I don't like talking about things that aren't friendly, but I have some real disagreements with the direction of Vermont over the last 4 years. Governor Shumlin says, I don't have any ideas. I'll tell you two ideas. Governor Shumlin, I think, said yesterday on another radio network that he's had all kinds of sleepless nights over. Nobody's more frustrated than the failure of Vermont's health care reform, and he's had an awful lot of sleepless nights over it. I'll tell you one thing, my sleepless nights over things that go wrong when I'm governor are going to happen in Vermont, not out of state. We've got a governor that spent 25% of the last session out of state, talking to special interests, telling us that he's working 7/24 to get things done for Vermont. But then when we look at the record, we see he's been out of state 25% of the time. I think there's an inconsistency there. I've got plenty of great ideas, and Governor Shulman doesn't understand the cap idea. If you've been paying attention to what's going on, it's an interesting concept. We're going to flush out the issues on it and be talking significantly about it over the next 10 days.
Dave Feliciano, you'd like to address the question that I raised to the governor, or if you'd like to respond to something else that he said here.
Not second-guessing what Peter has done and who he's appointed. I don't think it's worth second-guessing. That's old news. The thing I want to make sure we're focused in on is that I want to make sure that we can have an alternative health care solution so that Vermonters have a choice, not Montpelier giving you a choice, but you actually have a choice to select your health care, and we can control health care costs. I think we're still waiting for a lot of details, like Peter was saying. We're waiting. He's just criticized Scott for not having details on his platform, and yet we don't have any ideas about how the single-payer health care system is going to be funded and what it's actually going to look like. So I'm wondering right now, what's going to come first, Scott Milne's platform or the health care budget finance report? I don't know which one's next, but one of those has to come up next. So we need to focus in on making sure we have health care coverage for all of Vermonters, and we can do that affordably in the free market. We need to cut our spending and spend our money more wisely, which we can do. I've done that in the back. That's my background. And we need to make sure we have property taxes that are aligned with the school budget so that people can have school choice. Not only will we reduce spending, but we'll be able to reduce property taxes and make Vermont a more pleasant and a more desirable people, a place for our people to live, our children to live. One of the reasons I decided to run was my son's 16 years old, and I heard, you got to come home, you got to get off the road, because you're not going to see him again. Once he goes to college, he's gone, and that's unacceptable. I want my son here with me.
Emily Payton.
Hello. As some people know, this is the third time I'm running, the first time I've been in this debate, so I'm thankful. And you also may know that it took Lincoln many, many times to get elected and other good leaders. I want to talk about the difference between me and the other candidates here. I'm the only candidate who will have no influence of money in my campaign. I'm probably the only candidate, and you can correct me, who has opened their home year after year to homeless families and individuals. And I may add that nobody has ever stolen anything from me who has stayed in my home, but it's been a challenging experience. I'm probably the only candidate who is growing agricultural hemp and who has been educating about the importance of the restoral of that crop. I'm the only candidate who, or maybe not the only candidate, who knows the anatomy of a chicken well enough to know how many things are back there to let go of an egg. But I have animals, and I am an activist. I'm here for you people. I'm here because we need a grand change. We need to change away from money and politics. We need to begin to understand monetary systems so that we can distribute enough money amongst working people, and not by hiking a minimum wage and putting it on small businesses. We need to have better distribution of money so that we can do the work we need to do and stop giving it to Wall Street.
Dan Feliciano, I'm going to have you come up. We're going to start the next round with you. You've talked about this idea of cutting spending. Give us an idea or two where you want to cut spending.
Right. I was actually, as I was looking at the numbers, I'm trying to understand the finances in more detail. I actually put in a request to understand the finances better. I think we can start with the challenges for change. That was a bipartisan, as I understand, the governor himself supported it. And in that charter and that challenges for change, they said a rebalancing of the prison system budget can achieve a 7.9% savings. So when I start talking about those exact savings, that's where I'm talking about. It would make it easier to start there rather than come in with a fresh slew of ideas. Does everyone remember the challenges for change budget that came out? It talked about prisons, how we can reform the prison system, rebalance the budget. It talked about how we can reform the AHS budget, reducing that by almost 5%. And so on. So I think that would be a great platform, since people seem to be skeptical about cutting expenses, that everyone has already, not everyone, but a lot of the legislative body has already bought into. But we can do a lot with that starting point already.
Scott, no, let me have you answer that question next. What would you cut in state government?
I think Challenges for Change is a four-year-old program that was abandoned by Governor Shulman when he came into office, even though I believe he was an advocate for it. I think that was a good idea. It wasn't about cutting state government. It was about containing the rate of growth of state government. I'm not into cutting too many things in state government. I think this property tax idea is going to put a lot of pressure on the legislature to fix things, get a simplified formula that makes sense. I think what we really need to do is to get, basically under the Shulman administration, we've got going on 4 years now of the rate of spending growing at about three times the rate of inflation. That's got to end. What we really need to do is get predictability into property taxes. The other thing we need is a economic model that's going to make sense. We've got a governor that's flushed almost $100 million down the toilet on a healthcare reform plan that last night he said if it's not going to be good for the economy, he's not going to move forward with. I believe what he said 4 years ago was it was his solution for getting the economy going. So if we've got 4 years into it and now the day before the first primary of the gubernatorial election, all of a sudden we're not sure it's going to be good for the economy, and if it's not, we're not going to move forward with it. To me, it means that we've missed 4 years of getting our economy back on track. We've missed 4 years of having an economy where seniors can be optimistic about retiring comfortably here. We've had 4 years of lost opportunity of creating an environment where young entrepreneurial kids want to stay in Vermont instead of leave Vermont. That's what I think we need to get to work on.
Peter Shumlin?
What's the question?
Where would you cut? Where would you make cuts in state government?
Well, not where would I. I have delivered. I've delivered four consecutive balanced budgets without raising income taxes, sales taxes, rooms and meals tax, and hardworking Vermonters. That's hard work. And one of the reasons that we have the best bond rating, one of the strongest in the country, one of the reasons that we're seeing an economic rebound in this state that's faster than the states around us, and we do have the fastest growth rate in the Northeast, is the simple fact that we are managing our fiscal, our state budget in a fiscally sound manner. I brought the same business practices that I used for years making a living in a state to state government, and we're on the right track. Having said that, I've got to address some of the criticisms that we just heard from Scott. You know, at least Dan has ideas. Dan comes forth with ideas and plans. Now, they might be out of the mainstream of many Vermonters, but he has ideas. All we hear from Scott is complaint after complaint after complaint, and I think he misunderstands some of the basic things that have been going on in the state. Health care. The money that we spend on health care is to implement the Affordable Care Act. That was passed by President Obama in Congress. It is not single-payer health care. Single-payer health care is where we want to go because it's simpler. It will include everybody. You'll have health care because you're a Vermonter, and it will contain cost and allow us to raise incomes and grow prosperity. So Scott needs to understand many things if he's going to be governor. One of them is there is a huge difference between the Affordable Care Act, which I was asked to implement, didn't, and single-payer health care, which is where I believe we need to go to grow jobs and economic prosperity.
I'm going to take host prerogative here for a moment. Governor, please don't go anywhere. Everybody here in this audience, everybody in Vermont wants to know how you're going to pay for this single-payer universal system that you've got in mind. You say you need to wait until January. Why? Why can't you tell these people today?
Well, there's no state in the country that has moved from a premium-based system to one that is based upon raising money but based upon ability to pay. My plan is going to be based upon ability to pay. If we've learned anything from the Affordable Care Act and what they sent to us from Washington, D.C., it's this. Don't go out with a plan until it's ready. Designing a system that moves from premiums to ability to pay is both complicated and you have to get it right, because healthcare has a huge impact on the economy. So what I said yesterday and what I said many times is we're designing it. We've got a great team on it. We will have it ready for the legislature in January, but we don't want to get this wrong. And as I've said before, we believe this is going to grow jobs, economic opportunity, and improve quality of life, so Vermonters aren't making horrid choices when it comes to healthcare. They aren't in fear of losing their healthcare and going or having a catastrophic healthcare issue and going bankrupt. But we're going to make sure that we got a great plan in January. It's not ready. If it were, we'd give it to you.
All right, I want to move our discussion next to a question we got from our audience here about family farms. Dan, let me have you start this round here. Family farms, the writer says, are still hurting. The only farms that seem to do well are to be factories that run on illegal help. Why has nothing been done to force farms in Vermont to hire Vermonters?
That's a great question, and it's a tricky question to answer. First, I would argue that we can reduce some of those EPA regulations that we've been putting on the farm that requires them to essentially be certified. I don't think small farms need to go through all those EPA hoops, jump through all those hoops and hurdles to get certified so that they can continue to grow and be prosperous. As to who the farmers are hiring and the illegals, if they are illegals, I haven't been on a farm to actually see that firsthand. I know there's a lot of talk that there's illegals working on all these farms and they come at a much lower cost, but I haven't seen that firsthand. And if farmers are doing that, they're breaking the law and something should be done about it. But I don't have firsthand knowledge of that actually taking place.
Okay. Yeah. May I have you answer that same question, please?
I think where it's appropriate on a governor's watch to, you know, you take the hit when things aren't going well and you should get credit when things are going well. I think one of the things that I compliment Governor Shumlin for, and I do think it's not you just taking credit. I think you've had an active part in this microbrewery renaissance, this farm to table. I think I would take a difference with the question. I think there's a lot of good things going on in family farms in Vermont right now. Farmers, as anybody here knows, I've worked on farms a lot in my life. Farmers are good business people if you're going to be a successful farmer. That we've got young people, I think, for the first time in Vermont getting into small farming, and this microbrew renaissance thing is another version of agricultural entrepreneurism. I see that as very healthy, whether those people stay in the small farms or stay in the microbrews. Those are young entrepreneurs that are going to help power our economy as we go forward. So my hat's off, whether it's Governor Shumlin's leadership directly from the executive office or things that have happened around the states. I think that's good. And frankly, I think it's a red herring, the fact that we have ambitious, primarily Mexican-Americans coming to work on our farms. It's hard to get young people here that don't want to go to college and want to stay on a farm, so I'm supportive of those things.
Peter Shumlin, you're next on that question.
You know, I think Vermont has done a good job under previous governors, and I hope we're continuing it, of ensuring that we can get our milk to market, that our farmers can get the work they need to do, get done. In light of the national debate over immigration reform and a lack of consensus there, which is an embarrassment, I believe. So we've done some things that I think have ensured that those who are working on our farms can be part of our communities, can drive to the grocery store, can get to health care if they need it. And I think, you know, Vermont probably does a better job than almost any other state in ensuring that in this difficult challenge that we're in, where our farmers really can't get enough labor to do the work that we need to do to get our products to market, that we're making some of the right choices. Having said that, of the 9,200 jobs that we've grown in the state since I've been governor, many of them are in the food-related industries, and I appreciate Scott's plug for us, but we're really making great progress on farm to plate, on ensuring that we're getting more farmers, getting the value-added price for their products. We're seeing young farmers come back to Vermont. That's a huge deal. And we're finally seeing a kind of agricultural renaissance in our food products that's getting the best food you can grow anywhere, not only in our farmers markets, but around the rest of the country. It's a real economic driver, and we want to keep it up.
Emily Payton.
Hello, Mark. May I answer two questions? Because what we're seeing happening here is we're seeing the men taking over the whole situation here, and I had to do some behind-the-scenes pushing to be included in this debate. And when we're talking about discrimination, there still exists a ton of discrimination against women, and I find it a lot in this political situation. Can I answer the last question that you skipped over for me and this question, please?
Go ahead.
Thank you. The last question, I'll take this question first about the farming situation. What we need and can do is to put a two-year service exchange for tuition. We have enormous manpower in our youth coming out of high school. We need to do a lot of things with that manpower. We need to increase the amount of farms we have. I haven't even heard climate change mentioned yet today, but we need to increase our farmland and our productive farmland. I think we have 15% now. We need to move it up determinedly. We need to be aiming for 85% food production so that we can take care of ourselves. Let's do a two-year service exchange. Let's not only have the only option for people is to go into the military in order to have their tuition. We have a lot of work that we can put these young people to work to help us here in Vermont, and that's one of my proposals. And I do have ideas as well. The second question here was about reducing the cost of government.
We're going to give you a minute here. You were not missed on a round, so please go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes, I was. However, let's not debate that. Let's just move forward.
Thank you.
The reduction of the cost of government. We need to increase school choice. We need to fund homeschooling. We need to look at a state reserve bank and stop spending $80 million, I think the number is, for our debt service in order to pay Wall Street. We also need to reform our prison industry. We need to legalize cannabis. So those are some of the things. We need to introduce debt-free education. So these things, and then thank you for allowing me to answer that as per my request, Mark.
We're going to take our final break here. When we come back, we'll give our candidates 2 minutes each to convince you if they haven't already. We'll be back right after these important announcements.
A lot of people aren't really secure where their food comes from, not knowing if it's contaminated, not knowing how it's grown.
If you just want to do a few chickens, a few pigs, a beef cow, sky's the limit, or you can make it as small as you want.
Whatever we give to them, we feel like we get back tenfold. I love coming out here in the morning with a cup of coffee and saying hi to the cows and the pigs and the chickens. We're grateful to them, and we feel that we owe them the best life that we can give them.
Backyard farms are good for your family, belly, and soul. See the new film at guysfarmandyard.com.
We have about 10 ducks, 2 horses, and probably around 15 chickens. Me and my sister take care of all the animals.
Other than, you know, maybe playing a video game or watching TV, getting some fresh air, getting some exercise.
I think that it's definitely a great way to teach your kids something that's really useful for the rest of their lives.
Well, I want to have a farm when I'm older. I mean, definitely continue having animals.
Backyard farms are good for your family, belly, and soul. See the new film at guysfarmandyard.com.
We're back here broadcasting live this morning from the Northfield Savings Bank gazebo. I want to thank again our friends at Guy's Farm and Yard. I want to thank our candidates for joining us as well, too. And we're going to begin our closing statements here. Dan Feliciano, before you sit down, let me have you take 2 minutes here and talk to our audience about what you haven't talked about that you want to share with them.
I think I've made my point clear. I'm the only candidate up here that stands strongly against the single-payer healthcare system and has alternative solutions on the table that will not remove healthcare as a choice of yours and empowers you to decide who your doctor is and where you go for your services. I've also articulated that I'm for cutting spending. And as I said earlier, we can cut spending in a very sound way, and we can also leverage the good work that had already been started and build upon the challenges for change spending cuts that we've had there. We can also reduce property taxes by providing school choice. Well, I didn't get a chance to talk about school choice in charter schools, but it's been demonstrated that areas that have school choice have property values that are 5.6% higher than other areas. There's larger classroom sizes and outcomes are actually better. That's one way we can keep people. So I want to make sure that you understand what I believe that you are in a position to make the right choices for yourself. And I want you to have that opportunity. I want to get government out of the way so that you can ensure you have the freedom to choose who your doctor is, who your schools are, and making sure that you're not being saddled with high taxes. Additionally, the gun owners of Vermont have ranked me the number one candidate in favor of protecting the Second Amendment, which we didn't talk about. So I want to make sure that people are clear about that issue as well. Thank you.
Sunwilm, next.
Thanks, Mark. So this is the last chance I have to not tell any bad jokes.
That's correct.
Okay. I get a lot of advice on not telling jokes at things like this. I'll say, first of all, I want to make sure that the umbrella over everything is that I have a lot of respect for Peter Shumlin. I have a lot of respect for what he's accomplished in his life. I just don't think he's a good governor. It's interesting that we're here in 2014, and 1994, my mom, Marion Milne, who many of you know, launched her first campaign for state representative. She had a pretty rich life of being a pioneering woman business owner, of working with an awful lot of nonprofits and civic organizations, actually using her her position as a small pioneering woman business owner to get involved in a lot of those organizations. My mom's 1994 campaign for the State House, she was running with a gentleman named Kermit Richardson, who many of you may remember. He was a minority leader in the House. When my mom announced she was running, Kermit, who was a friend of the family's, said, "I love Marion, but she doesn't stand a chance. She lost her JP's race in Washington a few months ago. How's she going to get elected to the House?" My mom ran that campaign. Her theme was, "I'm naive enough to believe that I can make a difference." She won that race in spite of Kermit's handicap. And a lot of people are handicapping me that why am I bothering to do this? Well, I'm naive enough not only to believe that I can make a difference, I believe I'm intelligent enough to understand that Vermont very much needs a different path. If you agree with me that Vermont needs a different path, what I ask you to do is join me in being naive enough to believe that you can make a difference. I've talked to an awful lot of people that have moved to Florida because they're sick of Vermont. I think I'd get 75% of the Vermonter in Florida vote. My fear is after the election, I'm going to have 75% of the I didn't think I could make a difference, so I didn't vote for you, Scott, vote. So I'd ask you to think about in your heart what you want for Vermont and join me if you believe that we need a more moderate path. We need more balance in the legislature in Montpelier. Thank you.
Peter Shumlin, you're next.
Thank you, Scott and Dan and Emily, for running. And Emily, I've got to respond to what you said. I wish we had more women running for office in Vermont. I wish we had more women running for office in America. I will support you at any debate, being at any debate, and I hope that my opponents will join me in that call. Listen, I know that Scott has just suggested that we should replace this governor. I got to tell you that I am extraordinarily proud of the work that I have done over the last 4 years to move Vermont's economy in the right direction. And I'm going to stay, I wish to stay on this job, which is an extraordinary honor to have. Why? Because we're making progress and we're headed in the right direction. We just have more work to do. When you look at what we've accomplished, from ensuring that every Vermont child can get two years of free college if they choose, when parents are dealing with a crushing debt, that universal pre-K is happening in Vermont, that we're revamping our education system so that it's the best in the country, when we're ensuring that we can know what's in our food when we buy it, that we through GMO labeling, which I'm proud of, that we're raising a minimum wage so that when someone works 40 hours a week, they don't have to live in poverty in the state, even though many in the rest of the country are refusing to do that. That when we're making sure that we're building out renewable energy, rebuilding our farms, a green, cleaner energy future, and that we're getting results, 9,200 new jobs, one of the lowest unemployment rates in America, balanced budgets and fair taxes. If that's radical, I'm in. If the kind of policies that we've been implementing are all the things that Scott claims they are in terms of labels, I think what we're doing is good for Vermont. I also believe that attacking the real challenges that we're facing is what's going to lead us to our more prosperous future. So we're doing the work. It's tough work. It isn't easy. We are making great progress. We have more work to do, and I'm asking you for your vote. Thank you.
Emily Payton.
Thank you, and thank you, Peter, and I apologize, Mark. Thank you for having me today. I'm sorry if I stepped on your toes. I got to take care of business. I'm a fighter, and I'm fighting for the earth, and I'm fighting for the people. And I will stand up to the fossil fuel industry, and I'll stand up to Wall Street and get us a better circulation of money in the amongst the working people so that we can engage in the economy with dignity. I want to tell you all that I have samples of hemp, hempcrete, and other articles that we can do with hemp. People think it's silly. It's silly about hemp. Hemp used to be grown here in exchange for taxes. We ought to do it again. If you can build homes out of hemp, if you can build cars out of hemp, if you can eat hemp in ice cream, if you can make clothes out of hemp, if you can make hard plastics out of hemp, if you can reduce your arthritis because of hemp, if you can make insulation out of hemp. What's silly about that? Honestly, I have samples over here that I can show you that we could reduce our fossil fuel use and increase our manufacturing simply by growing agricultural hemp. And incidentally, the hemp that I'm growing is taken from seed that was growing in Winooski, and it's growing almost close to as tall as here. So I don't feel silly advocating for hemp, and I hope you don't feel silly joining me in doing it, and I'd love your support, and thank you all.
Emily Payton, Dan Feliciano, Peter Shumlin, and Scott Mill, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you all for joining us as well, too. Let's give these folks a hand, please. That's going to wrap things up for us here from Northfield Savings Bank gazebo here at the Tunbridge World's Fair. I want to thank our friends on WDEV AM and FM for joining us and WLVB in Morrisville. That's going to wrap things up for today. We'll send it back to our studios and Jack Donovan.
Thank you very much, Mark. A reminder, you are listening to locally owned and operated 96.1 WDEV FM in Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie, AM 550, WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier, and serving the kingdom on FM 101.9 from Island Pond. Coming up in just a moment, the Midday News Service with Joel Nashman.
Attention Vermonters, would you like a different vehicle but don't think your trade is worth much? Then you need to check out the Cash for Junkers event at the new McMahon Chevy Buick in Morrisville. Hi, this is Steve Sace from McMahon.
And I'm Ed Dever, sales manager at McMahon. With Cash for Junkers, if your trade rolls, floats, or flies and has a VIN number, you'll get a guaranteed minimum trade allowance of 3